Hey there, listeners. It's me, Sam. I just wanted to tell you this is one of those episodes that I have been working on for quite some time. It's a little longer, but it's a different format, interweaving narrative and music. You can think of this like season two of the Music Post. I'm going to make it a good summer with some of these more extended science-y narrative episodes and some more old school music episodes. I'm playing the Goldberg Variations in August, one of my absolute favorite pieces, so I'll get to that too. In the meantime, if you like this, please tell your friends. You can find out more about all the artists you hear at www.samueljpost.com/podcast, and you can reach me at samueljpost@gmail.com. Almost forgot my email there. The show comes in four segments, along with an introduction. I hope you like it. Here it is.
Well, this was my graduation recital at the Juilliard School, the famous Juilliard School.
This is Carlos Rodriguez. He's a pianist and a colleague of mine at Levine Music, and in one of his degree recitals at Juilliard, he played Bach's Prelude and Fugue in B minor from Book One of the Weltemmer Clavier, which you can hear in the background right now. Or I should say, he kind of played it.
And I was goofing around all the time, practicing, and the time comes in the recital. And then I go, and it's all going great, and all of a sudden, oh my God, I don't remember the next page. So I had to then do all this improvising, you know? It's just like going to modulations and modulations, and then finally I remember, where is that? Where's that? I mean, I don't have it here, but where's that last page? Where's that? Because it kept in augmented, diminution, stretos, different keys. And, you know, the teachers were there. So and then it was off. Okay. Oh, finally. The last page. Teachers came, wonderful, wonderful Bach, wonderful. Okay, you guys. You can do like it.
So today on the Music Post, we are all about improvisation, and not just the cover-up, can't remember your music kind. I'm talking about this kind. The thing is, even if you're a regular concert goer, chances are you've never heard anyone improvise live in a classical style, and maybe if you did, the person was trying to hide it, like Carlos, or you didn't even notice, like his professors. Maybe you're thinking, just like I used to, that's because improvisation just doesn't fit well, doesn't work with classical music, unlike freer styles like jazz. Over the next two episodes, we'll find out how people came to think that and how improvisation really got written out of the story and the traditions of classical music, and why, hopefully, it's on its way back. For me, this really gets to the heart of what we value in music, why we make music, and why we listen to it. First, the basics. What is improvisation? Why is it super cool? And how can it work itself seamlessly into classical music and make it more cool in the process? Not that it's not cool already, but still, could be even cooler. I talked to jazz players, neuroscientists, adorable piano students, and my newest discovery, Carlos, to find the answers. Stay with me.
Oh my God.
These days, when people think of improvisation, they think of jazz. So to start out, I went to one of the best jazz players I know. That is my very own jazz piano teacher, Paul Bratcher, who, if you haven't heard of him, you should definitely check him out and make him famous, because he is totally awesome, and you're about to hear that for yourself when you hear him jam. Like, not even playing for real, just totally off the cuff, trying to teach me some stuff, playing a tune that I was learning on a really janky upright piano in my lesson. And this is veering a little bit away from our topic of the day, classical improvisation, but when he plays Listen to His Articulation, I spent the last 3 months or so trying in vain to match it, to imitate it, and that's before we get even to the content of what he's playing, which is also brilliant. Anyway, I asked him why he loves improvising, why he was drawn to it, and why it's the heart of jazz.
This is just one vehicle for self-expression. Not that, you know, the other ones are any inadequate or anything, but this is the one that I think I gravitated towards. And I like being able to make music that only sounds like Paul.
Oh, yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, as much as I like
Meaning
Cyrus.
You.
Yes. As much as I like Cyrus, as much as I like Tommy Flanagan, as much as I like insert whomever, you know, at the end of the day.
You could do that still writing it down, though. And you know, repeating, practice what you write down and then playing it.
No, it wouldn't be the same.
It wouldn't be the same.
Because the beauty, for me, the beauty of it is that when you put different people together, it becomes moments in the sense that it's all about what they've heard and then interacting. This decision by this person, it's a butterfly effect.
Yeah.
These decisions that they do allow it to be that way. Now, if everybody wrote it all down and then everybody rehearsed it and then everybody played it, you might get to that. But you probably won't. It's kind of like the friends that you have that you don't talk to a lot, but when y'all all get together again, it's like y'all been talking, you know, like you never stopped. And so, for me, that's what this can be for a song, for a person, for a group.
So he's talking about spontaneity, about the excitement of not knowing what you're going to create, creating something different each time, but always making something at the same time that's uniquely yours, the improviser, or the improvisers, that's born out of your experience and personalities.
You have a voice. You don't sound, not necessarily that you don't sound like anybody else, but you don't sound like anybody else, you know? You approach it differently. Your lines that you decide to play or don't decide to play are different. How you decide to interact with the rhythm is different. And so I think it's cool. And it's a lot of fun to do when it's done well.
Thank you.
Okay, at this point, he explained and talked through a bunch of possible ending schemes for me, which took a while, but since I can't leave you on that tense dominant chord, I'll kind of just skip ahead to the end here. Paul Bratcher, colleague and teacher of mine at Levine Music, jazz pianist. Find out more at paulbratcher.com.
I think that from a musical perspective, it's always been this really fascinating thing that as a lover of music and a consumer of music, I could always just say, wow, isn't that just so remarkable to listen to and enjoyable to hear, and I feel great listening to it.
This is Dr. Charles Lim. He's an ear surgeon and a professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, as well as the Peabody Conservatory of Music. He's also an amateur musician, so yeah, he's got a lot going on. But he took the time to talk to me about one of the focuses of his neuroscience research. Yes, he's got that going on as well, which is improvisation.
But if you flip it around and look at it from a brain perspective, it becomes really remarkable and you start thinking to yourself, well, how is it possible that the brain can accomplish these tasks?
Dr. Lim is interested in improvisation as a general model for spontaneous creativity, how we come up with novel ideas on the spot, which he was quick to point out is not something that only musicians or musical improvisers do.
To me, improvisation is one of the most fascinating things that happens on this planet. It's both in terms of high-level art, but also in terms of the most mundane ways that we go about our daily business, meaning that life is improvised. It's not scripted. Throughout the day, we're making all sorts of improvisational moves. Now, most of them don't have any artistic or cultural significance, but they certainly have neurologic significance. This conversation that you and I are having is improvised, to a large extent. We may have some idea of what we're going to talk about, but what the actual conversation will be, we don't know. We're sort of figuring it out as we go.
But of course, a musical improvisation is also very different from a conversation. Think about it. How often do you speak in uninterrupted, eloquently formed paragraphs? Or do you usually pause, stumble, go back, start over? Fumbling over your own ideas, even in your first supposedly fluent language? See, in music, you can't really do that. And then add to the problem of, you actually have to execute on the instrument you're playing. In English, it's trivial for me to say a word or string of words once I think of them and decide to say them. The difficult part is thinking of them in the first place. In music, though, we have these two problems. Not only do you have to think of what to say at lightning speed, which already takes all kinds of talent and training, you have to then actually say it.
There's a sort of like translational kind of executive aspect of having a thought and then actualizing that thought. And in music, the interface is the instrument or your voice or whatever. And in language, it's your larynx. And so the more control and expertise you have, in a way, the more that medium or intermediary can vanish.
Yeah.
So I think what a lot of high-level musicians are trying to achieve through all this practice is getting the instrument and their fingers and their hands out of the way, so that the line of communication between their brain and what they're hearing is as direct as possible.
So improvising is really difficult. No surprise there. What else do we know about it? Well, Dr. Lim uses fMRI to try to find out what's going on in the brain during improvisation. Wait, what's fMRI? Okay, so with fMRI, you get into this machine like a regular MRI, except instead of looking at your bones and stuff like that, it's looking at what's going on in your brain, and basically is measuring what parts of the brain are getting the most blood, kind of over this loosely defined time window that's not that specific, but reasonably specific. And therefore, it's basically measuring what parts of the brain are doing the most brainy brain cell stuff. Then you can compare what's happening during something like improvisation with previous studies that show what parts of the brain are doing stuff during things like talking or listening or other stuff, as we'll hear in a minute. But first you might be wondering, well, how do we take improvisation, which typically happens with an instrument, and look at it inside this fMRI machine, which is not your most convenient place for playing an instrument or bringing one, especially a piano.
So I've read that you brought in a keyboard player into the a few keyboard players into the fMRI machine with a kind of mock keyboard made for the experiment. Is that right?
Right, that's right. Yeah, that piano took a long time, about 2 years to get to work. But once it actually worked, and it's a simple thing in a way. It's got 35 keys. It's plastic. They're full size keys, and it does feel like you're playing a keyboard. That's for most jazz musicians, it's really not that unusual.
Yeah.
But it is special in that you can play it in this fMRI environment, and we can record every single note and the timing and the actual pitch of every note being played digitally. So it's kind of nice.
You heard that right. Dr. Lehman made a new keyboard just for the fMRI machine, which is pretty much the definition of dedication, I think.
But it does seem like one possible dominant feature is that in high-level expert improvisation, there is some suppression, or what we call deactivation, of part of your frontal lobe.
The frontal lobe being the part of the brain that supposedly helps us look into the future and make good decisions from a bunch of options, and is much smaller in the lesser apes and monkeys, as well as other non-human animals, though apparently I just found out from reading about it online that it's not much smaller in the great apes. Anyway, if you're deciding whether to eat that fourth helping of dessert, the frontal lobe is the place where you evaluate the consequences of that action and decide maybe it's not the best choice. So what Dr. Lim's study suggests is that improvisers aren't really choosing from a bunch of options at all. They're just really going without planning, which is surprising.
This is perhaps responsible for how some artists are able to enter these kind of flow states where you're sort of letting go and generating ideas at a million miles a minute, that just where things are just pouring out of your brain because you've kind of unshackled the brain. You're sort of turning off the self-censoring mechanisms. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing that part of the brain happen.
There was also some indication that improvisation involves some unexpected linguistic processing.
The language errors are interesting because depending on the experiment and the musical modality, we're definitely finding that we can invoke traditional language areas during functional brain activation of purely musical exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by that is... Yeah, go
yeah.
Ahead.
Well, and these are language areas that aren't as active during a regular memorized performance.
That's right. In fact, so if you have two musicians that are having a musical exchange that's memorized, and then they switch to a musical exchange that's improvised, there's no words, there's no talking. They're just playing pianos back and forth. The language activity goes way up in the improvised segments. But there's another area that's going down, which is linked to semantic meaning, or in a weird way, like vocabulary, or
right.
what a sentence might mean or what a word might mean. That's all going down.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this sort of musical communication that involves maybe the syntactic structure of music, but without the involvement of semantics.
So these studies... interesting stuff, some surprising findings definitely to build on. But at the same time, people and the media often read a little bit too much into these brain studies than is necessarily justified. Incidentally, this is one of my biggest pet peeves when reporters will take some scientific study, which admittedly was probably quite intriguing, but then just completely blow it out of proportion and write a ridiculous article. And the media love to hear about stuff happening in the brain, which is a little weird because everything that you do involves stuff happening in your brain. This seems to happen a lot. I just Googled for an example, and there was some neuroscience study which looked at the effect of this hormone in the brain on people's tendency to seek revenge. And apparently one of the headlines that came out of it was, quote, "A cheese sandwich is all you need for strong decision making," which is not really what the study showed. Also, I should point out that Dr. Lim himself was more skeptical than anyone about his findings. Anyway, neuroscience media rant over. So in particular, fMRI studies definitely can't tell us what I want to know the most, which is, how does someone get to this point of expertise in the first place? All we really know about that right now is that there's this mysterious combination of talent or ability and motivation and, of course, practice. But I think there's also this cultural environmental element. Like I said before, improvisation just isn't in the usual playbook for teaching kids piano. And so obviously I blame much of my own lack of ability in this area on this cultural element. So what happens when kids get that extra little nudge? Meet Cameron. He's my 6-year-old piano student, and you're about to hear him improvise for the first time. Or at least, if we did it before, he didn't remember. So you're going to hear us play together for about a minute or so, and while it's not going to be the greatest music you've ever heard, I think it's pretty impressive. I mean, he has to listen really closely to my rhythms and react to them and play along, and it gives him this opportunity, just the very beginning of imagining sounds in his head and thinking about how he can make those sounds come out of the piano in real time. Got a little crazy. We debriefed after.
Ooh, was it fun?
Yes. And very fun, most of all, because I had hair on my face, so I didn't see anything.
You couldn't see anything the whole time while you were playing?
Yeah. Look, I have hair on my face.
Maybe it's time for a haircut then.
Never.
Never.
I just don't like seeing boxes things because I like those in my eyes.
Yeah, you know what the best part is? I recorded it so we can listen.
That's what I was thinking of.
What do you mean that's what you were thinking of?
I wanted you to record it and my wish came true.
Very good.
Is this for his dad's Father's Day?
It could be. You want me to send it? Send it to your mom?
Yes.
Yeah? Oh, good idea. Yeah.
Send
good. It. I'll send it, okay.
So clearly it's a little soon to tell whether my nudging will turn Cameron into a great improviser or even a musician, but we'll get more into that next episode. And in the meantime, was it not really cute? Yes. Yes, it was. And clearly he's enjoying himself, and I think learning about music in the process. Okay, we have arrived at our final act for the day, Carlos the Orchestra. So Carlos is one of these people who makes me rethink who I am as a musician, and I don't mean for the better, unfortunately. It's been happening quite a bit recently, makes me think maybe I should get into podcasting or something. Anyway, he's been hiding this gift he has from the public. He doesn't really improvise in concerts, been hiding it from me. But I heard his Juilliard story a little while ago, and I was like, wait, what? You improvised your way through one of the most monumental Bach fugues and managed to pass it off as Bach? I mean, yes, it's funny that his professors didn't realize, but it's still totally insane that people would mistake it for the real thing. He seems to think this talent is teachable, at least to someone like me. We'll see how that works out next episode and in future ones. I hope to have him on the show regularly, really as much as I can. But I mean, the music is just oozing out of him. Clearly, classical music's a lack of improvisation culture made a little difference to him growing up, which unfortunately means I can't blame my own defects on that very same factor. We sat down the other day, and this happened.
So why don't we start with, you want to do another...
Let's do it together.
You do one first, though. You do one first.
On what?
So how about I give you the style, and you go.
I'm not awake enough to work. This is romantic style, Wagner.
Okay.
It's easier. Well, secondary dominance.
Yeah.
I can tell you how it works. Already you have, you know? You have six, and 1/6 4. If you see his music, it's all over that.
Yeah.
And then... Thank you. something like that.
Just warming up. I don't know. Maybe
just warming up.
Getting ready.
Maybe you couldn't sense my reaction during that, but let me tell you, my jaw was on the floor the whole time. In case you didn't get the full orchestral effect, we're going to do it all again. Next time, hopefully in a better room with at least somewhat in-tune piano, better acoustics. Like I said, though, go out and spread the word. Nobody knows about Carlos, so that's on you now. That's it for today. I'll put up links to all the performers you heard, except Cameron. He doesn't have a website yet. That'll be at samueljpost.com/podcast. Some quick acknowledgements. Everything you heard today was, except for the gorgeous Bach at the beginning, don't get me wrong, Bach is still the king. Everything else was improvised. That Bach recording was a snippet from Rosalind Turek. A couple of the short, softer excerpts you heard in the background were me. Also this one, which, as you can hear, is a little bit of a struggle. And I was cheating a little. It's really the second time I was playing it through, half making it up on the spot. But the other two you heard that I didn't explicitly attribute were Carlos. Next time we'll hear some knowledgeable people talk about the history of improvisation. I talked to some of the people who are in a better position than I am to shape its place in classical music today. And I talked to you, the people, the listeners out there, about what they want to hear. We'll hear some pretty well-forgotten improvisations of composers like Rachmaninoff, Granados, and Elgar, which were caught on early recordings. It's going to be great. Until then, I'm Sam Post. Reach me at samueljpost@gmail.com, and I hope you'll join me next time on The Music Post.